Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The World Atlas of Cheese, probably the ninth episode, a 1976 classic by Nancy Erkoff Stork, the Dutch cheese marketing expert who began work in 1956, has given us a introduction to cheese, some of the structures, ideas of cheese. Essentially, cheese is made when a chemical enzyme stops, makes the particular, what is it, casein water soluble. That then dissolves into water, then the milk, which is either from, mostly from cows, but can be from goats and horses and other things like that, and sheep. That condenses into a curd and whey, the whey gets removed off, and the curd itself is simply allowed to mature with various flavourings and structures involved in it due to bacteria and moulds or funguses which grow into the cheese, giving it some taste. Obviously, as these digest, they produce chemical byproducts which give us the taste of cheese. So cheese has a large amount of solid products, and probably the fat doesn't go into those solid products as much. But there is a sort of fat content in cheese, roughly a third to 50%. And we've heard about cream cheese, which we've talked in here. Now, you've labelled hearing me talk about the Gruyère Emmental from the south of France. We've gone up through some rather strange cheeses in the German area. I've forgotten what they're called. They're called, let's have a check again. Well, that massive cheese they're called, I can't believe, Munster cheese, which are really basically German cheeses. And then we've talked about the various Camemberts, the actual, shock of people saying to invent Camembert. And with all these cheeses, there's, the pre-industrial version of cheese where every cheese is a bit of a surprise. There's actually one cheese that this person's said is an underestimated cheese. There's also, besides cheesemakers needing to pool milk together, cooperatives, and you also have people who specialise, called affineurs, people who take unripe cheese and ripen them up to make some money, cheese investors. Now, we're on to our next section of France. France is such a big cheese section here, it's taken a while to read through it. And the area here is, the heading of this section is called The Cheese Has Arrived. Towards the south, where the river Mienne idly threads its way through the Normandy countryside. So I think Normandy, I thought, was up the north. That's right. In the direction of the Loire stands Etrames, with the Abbey of Notre Dame du Port du Salut. Built in 1233, after Napoleon's reign, Trappist monks returned from exiles, bringing with them dozens of dairy cows. They settled here and began producing. Wow. So, yeah, I wonder what the exile is and why you'd want to ban a Trappist monk producing a splendid cheese for their own consumption. Increased production followed a decision to use milk supplied by local farmers. Port du Salut cheese soon reached the street markets of Paris. A cheese factor, I suppose it's, there's a Y missing here, named Moki, who sold cheese in the capital over 100 years ago, would put out a notice on board claiming the arrival of a new supply, Arrivage de Fromage, the cheese has arrived. And within an hour, the entire supply would be sold. Production still done according to ancient recipe, now amounts to 200,000 cheeses a year. Portisoleu is a flat and cylindrical cheese with a pale yellow rind, semi-hard, has a good keeping properties and mild flavour. Other Trappist monasteries soon followed with the cheese. Falcon du Portisoleu in 1878, however, the name of the original Abbey cheese was replaced under legal protection. Perfect, yeah. Port du Salut in 1909, the monks of the Emmetral helped to establish, far from the Abbey, a then ultra-modern, commercially run factory where cheese was made under the name Port du Salut. The cheese, called Saint-Paulin, made from all parts of France, can be considered a close relative, although it is prepared somewhat differently. With all these religious orders, I've got a few elderly relatives who are in religious orders. They're all collapsing under modernity. Rare and spicy cheeses of the southeast. So I thought we were in the southeast because that's the Alpine regions near Switzerland, but between Tours and Poitiers is a land watered by the tributaries of Loire, a land so abundant that it is called Garden of France, Touraine. In Tours, they say, the very best French is spoken. The farmers of Touraine make a flamboyant and popular goat cheese, milk cheese, Saint-Marie, which is influenced by the Camembert in the way it's ripened. East of Touraine, on the Atlantic Ocean, isn't west the Atlantic, but okay, is the department of Vendée. Here we can taste the fromage natis, also called fromage de cure, a small square cheese first made in 1890 by a local parish priest. In those days, the cheese was known as Petit Breton. Production increased rapidly after the arrival of the Belgian cheesemaker, who added a professional touch and modified the recipe a little to suit the taste of his own country. It is now slightly resembles Remondu. Fromage de Curie is also made in Brittany. If we journey south and south east of Vendée to Vienne, de Sèvres and Châtenay, we come to a country where the farmers are prolific in making of dozens of different cheeses, mostly unripened dairy cheese, and an ever-increasing number of Chèvre, goat's milk cheeses, which are open only for a short time and hardly ever seen outside the district of origin. There's a fromage de la Mothe, for example, which is left to dry for about 15 days between the vine or plain tree leaves. The Chabichou, the Carré de Saint-Cyr, and the Fromage de Ruffec. Finally, an extremely rare collector's item, a small triangular cheese made of sheep's milk called Lanus. That's dreadfully close to anus. Prepared and the individuality and the rarity of the small cheeses is intended to compensate the cheese explorer for the scarcity that exists in Bordeaux to the south. No indigenous cheese is found in claret country. The vineyards leave precious room for meadows. Beyond the Department de Lens, the foothills of the Pyrenees, good grazing for dairy cattle. Influenced by Spanish cookery, the mountain herdsmen make their own fresh cheeses, strongly spiced with pepper and pimiento, especially in the Basque Country. Such are the cheeses Ores and Castillon. In winter time, when the cattle are kept in stables, Bethmale cheese, also known as Annals or Osset, is made, a hard, spicy cheese, very suitable for grating. That's right, when it becomes so hard and you can't eat it, you grate it. Now, some cheeses from the area of the Pyrenees are made from milk of ewes, and they are sent uncured, hopefully from ewes, not rams, are sent uncured to ripen in a unique cave of Rochefort, home of the famous blue cheese. Cheese from the cave. Rural cheeses of Corsica. The rugged mountainous Corsican landscape of pine forests, tumbling icy streams, ravines, and precipitous tracks is strictly sheep and goat country. Milk mountain herdsmen make cheese from both kinds of milk, sometimes mixed together. From the north and center of the island comes the square, creamy Nicolo, and the slightly more salted Venico, which is ripened for 3 months. In the south, Sartanus is made, and there is Bruco, a fresh cheese which is sometimes salted and preserved for winter. Most of Corsica's cheeses are powerful, rough, and goaty, quote-unquote goaty, as you might expect. It's a goaty cheese. The island also produces a blue vein cheese, Bleu de Corse, which resembles Roquefort. Most of the sheep's milk, however, is processed to white Roquefort and sent home to ripen in the Roquefort caves. Okay, there's another huge pictures. Oh my god, these huge, massive cheeses around the place. Okay, this is Corsica. Sounds an amazing country, because you can see the picture here. What a beautiful country it is. I'll have to visit Corsica. Lozenges of cheese may become ecstatic when presented with Roquefort. They describe it as a fine, noble cheese, delicately veined and marbled with a blue-green mould. Some would say that Roquefort is peerless, the greatest cheese in the world. Roquefort cheese comes from an area of the Massif Central, the east of the beautiful Georges of Tarin, an area of poor pasture land. The village of Roquefort sur-Lauzon stands on the remains of a mountain. Cambalu. Oh, what happened there? In prehistoric time, rainwater drained through the porous limestone strata to form gigantic underground water basin, so weakening the foundation of the Cambalu that one day the entire mountain collapsed. Well, there's Cambalu. There it is. Due to the collapse, the subsequent displacement cracks form called the Flinières, which serve as natural chimneys or air filters. In the underground cave, there is a continuous circulation of fresh air, which distributes the moisture evenly over the entire mountain. Believe it. This is just... I find this incredible. Cambalu breathes. Condensation and evaporation balance each other. The air pressure and temperature are in equilibrium, and the microclimate of its own equal purity. Here, Penicillium roquefort is developed, the mold families that grow on organic substances. Poor soil of the arid cusses make all but the most primitive agriculture impossible. And although the grass could hardly grow, the sheep thrived. Their milk made into a cheese that brought fame and prosperity to the Caucasus in general. The Roquefort isn't particular. There's nothing special about the milk of these Lacan sheep. It's only when a cheese is ripened at the center of the Campolu that it acquires form of penicillin Roquefort in its greenest veins and unique flavor. So Roquefort is a sheep cheese. I didn't know that. But moreover, it's this collapsed mountain. Okay, if you wouldn't read it, unless you go deep into Urquhart's stork country, what an amazing story. And what's right so good here, they've got the country and the region. The country is on the extreme of the page, and the region's here, Roquefort. Cheese. A blessing of blue. The inhabitants of the courses protect their prosperity by Confederation Generale de Production de Lait de Brebis et de Industriel de Roquefort. Its members are the sheep breeders who twice daily bring their sheep from the Caucasus to the hygienic stables where they are mechanically milked. My godfather. Also, members of the hundreds of manufacturers of the white Roquefort, both here and on Corsica and in the Pyrenees, and producers in the cave of Campolue. A Roquefort cheese receives its blessings of blue by being covered in a thin layer of salt, brushed and pickled and then stored in caves in such a way that the moist air can easily reach it. After some weeks, it's wrapped in the foil, where it continues to ripen. A Roquefort cheese weighs approximately 2.7 kilograms and is cylindrical in shape. It is also marketed in smaller prepacked portions. Its paste is white with blue-green veins and somewhat crumbly. The smell and the taste of this great yew cheese, the only sheep's cheese in the world to gain such renown, is highly flavoured, but nobly so. The cheese is provided with a guaranteed label for export purposes. Roquefort has long export history. Monastery chronicles of the 8th century mention the transport of Roquefort across the Alps, by which time it was established. The Romans were acquainted with it. Charlemagne enjoyed it, and by the 11th century we are recorded on the customs list. For hundreds of years, Roquefort cheese has been praised by authors including Casanova, who served it with ice-cold ham. Well, there you go. A volcanic mountainous area of mineral springs, the towns and villages built upon rocky outcrops of herbal pastures and high passes, the Department de Cantal gave its name to a mighty cheese that's probably being made during antiquity. Pliny the Elder describes a cheese from the Lozère and Guevardin, which in many respects resembles the present Cantal. So this is a new area. We've done Roquefort. Now we're on to Cantal. It's called C-A-N-T-A-L. In the period of the second half of the 18th century, we meet the cheese in an encyclopedia of D'Alembert and Diderot, with an illustration for of all the equipment needed for the preparation of a Forme du Cantal. These enormous drum-shaped cheeses have been sold in whole Auvergne and Cantal for centuries. The Cantal Famia is still prepared according to the following ancient tradition. And this is an explanation of it, the ancient tradition, and it goes on for a long time. Between the middle of May and the beginning of October, the herdsmen tend their cattle in the upland pastures. Each herd consists of 50 to 60 cows, usually the mahogany-coloured sellers and the smaller Abaracs, a hardy mountain stock. These herdsmen make cheese from the milk in their old, dilapidated stone huts using a very laborious process. As I say, this is not going to be modernised, no way. Young people say, oh, love labouring to make cheese. After being pressed for an hour, the curds are cut into strips and pressed again, a process which is repeated 6 to 10 times. So this is the cheddaring process. The curd is then left in the cheese press for 24 to 36 hours. During which time they begin to ripen. They are pressed again and turned at intervals. The turning procedure continues every other day for 3 months. At each turning, the rind is polished. Twice during the season, the herdsmen undertake a journey down the mountain roads to deliver their cheeses, some specimens weighing as much as 45 kilograms. Modern preparation techniques. Initially, the Cantal shows golden-coloured spots, which vanish as the cheese matures. Gradually, the rind turns darker, nearly black. Later, it becomes almost red, and finally grayish white. The full cream, milk smooth, consistent, retains the herbal flavour of the mountain meadows. The climate, the altitude, the type of cattle, and the specialty conditions of the soil make something very special about Cantal Famia, something I've never tasted. For this reason, great care has been taken to locate other places where identical natural conditions exist, and where the regional cheese can be produced as original Cantal. These places are the entirety of the Department of Cantal itself, 8 municipalities in Aveyron, 25 in Puy de Dôme, that's where I've been, Puy de Dôme, and one of Haute-Loire. Now that's interesting. I remember visiting Puy de Dôme, a beautiful, beautiful place. The heaviest cheeses are those from the region of Salyers. If a cantel is made at an altitude of at least 850 meters, it is entitled to bear the name of Haute Montagne. In the cheese dairies and valleys, away from the pure mountain air, but with the help of modern equipment, Cantal Lactea is made from pasteurized milk. The method of preparation is the same as that of Fumier, but the cheese ripens for a maximum of 2 months and has a less pronounced taste. The factories also produce the smaller cantels of 8 to 10 kilograms called cantelettes. Cantal cheese is also permitted in a rectangular shape, provided that it ripens for no less than 2 months. Finally, there are several partly cured cantels, such as Tom de Loge and Tom de Fraiche, which are used a great deal in preparation for regional dishes. Of course. Oh my godfathers. Who's that, the Dutch person who has foot cured cheese, and someone who said that Canberra is the cheese of God's feet. I've eaten God's feet. Now, Bleu Lavage, this is a profusion of cheeses from central France. So many cheeses here, you don't know what to say. Mountain country seems to go hand in hand with blue cheese. Several prime examples are found in the massive Central, not the least of which is Bleu Lavage, a dairy cheese that sometimes is more or less the same area of Cantal. The cheese is flat and cylindrical and weighs between 2 and 2.5 kilograms. It has been refined to the taste of a very special bouquet. It's said to stimulate the appetite and be good for digestion. So it's interesting. Australia has a massive sheep. I think we've got more sheep in Australia than any other country. I think we've got 30 million sheep. We make no Rockefeller here. Bit of a waste. You can imagine how dusty and metally it would taste. As the cheese is rather small, not a great deal of milk is required, which is just as well considering the scarcity of pasture. In places the landscape is rough, the deep valleys and ravines, and a few winding narrow roads. From early towns, small farms of the region, which often kept no more than 10 to 15 cows, have made their own cheeses. Since 1870, the farmers have been inoculating their curds with penicillin lacillum in the manner of the makers of Rockefeller. In part of the production has been taken over by cheese dairies, but there are still a few farmers around Tizac who make their own blue cheese called Bleu de Tizac Fumier. Twice weekly, the farmers must take his cheeses, until recently by donkeys or mule, to the affineur. This is the cheese merchant who then sets them aside to ripen in the valleys. Oh, wonders what's going on there. Only carefully collected, high quality milk is suitable for Bleu d'Avignon, as it is made into cheese when raw. The deep cooled evening milk of the previous day is warmed shortly before the processing and added to the fresh morning milk. The mold culture, again, penicillin galangum, gelosin, may be added to the milk, but usually sprinkled onto the curd after it's been transferred to the mold. After 3 or 4 days of washing and turning, the cheeses are kept at a temperature of 10 degrees Celsius. Here, they are rubbed with dry salt and pricked with needles that enables the air to penetrate and encourages the formation of mold. Now, there was this people putting nails into English cheese. Now, this process is completed within 3 to 4 weeks in a humid 8 degrees. By then, the rind has discolored from yellowish red to whitish and reddish spots. As soon as the green veins become visible, a small cheeses are packed in metal foil. They are then stored another few weeks at a temperature of 2 degrees C, from malty bread to monument. Owing to the inherent expertise of makers, the various blue cheeses of Massif Central are best in France. Some are named after the place of origin, such as Bleu Lacien or Bleu de Thiersac. which is an entirely different flavour because it's salted when it's warm. We do a lot of salting in our cheese. And Bleu de Lacuille, the latter from Lacuille district of Puy-de-Dôme, has a somewhat drier rind and less distinct flavour than the others mentioned, but processes an attractive veining introduced by Antoine Roussel in 1850. Roussel dipped a piece of mouldy bread from his home kitchen into the curds and subsequently produced a blue cheese like Marie Halle was earned him a monument. Now, Marie Halle is that Danish person who invented Havarti. The English got blue bread mould. Finally, we must mention Bleu de Coze, which ripens in natural caves under the Manor of Roquefort and is found everywhere in the Auvergne, Auvergne. Its taste greatly depends on grazing conditions, including composition and local soil, and the hours of sunshine during summer. Can you imagine doing that? The tender touch. In addition to the illustrious Roquefort, the much decorated Bleu d'Auvergne Saint-Nectaire cheese deserves to be mentioned. Made in Puy-de-Dôme. Puy-de-Dôme is an amazing place to see. I think there's little churches on these little volcanic plugs. In the immediate environment of Mount Dore, the cheese was already well known during the reign of Louis XIV. It's fragile little cheese prepared from a carefully collected milk from the sailors' cows and sold by the farmers once every fortnight to private cooperative affineurs. Cylindrical in shape, the cheeses are left to ripen on straw in damp cellars, often the old cellars in Clermont-Ferrand, once used for storing wine. After 3 months, these rinds is spotted yellow with ochre red. After 6 months, the taste of these cheeses is at best. It is subtle and mild, and they say in France, à la tendre position il respond, the major part, whatever that means. The major part produced is consumed in the region itself. The Varmouth cheese is recognisable by the oval casein disc. Factory-made cheese has a regular label, bearing blue-green guarantee imprint. The factory-made cheese has a rectangular label. A traditional Christmas soup is made with Saint-Nazaire, Saint-Nectaire, where slices of the cheese are mixed into a broth made of water, stale bread and salt. A few spoonfuls of cream may be added before serving. It sounds disgusting myself. There's hardly a cheese producing area of France that cannot boast a Chèvre or two. This is a goat cheese or two. And the Essai Central is no exception. It supports a number of these small characteristic goat cheeses. Perhaps the best known is Chèvre d'Ambert or Brique de Fours, I can't pronounce any of these things, which is sometimes partially made of cow's milk, giving the cheese a less pungent and taste and aroma. Mostly though, only goat's milk is used. A maturation period of 15 days on dry, raw straw makes Chèvreton a creamy, smooth cheese with a firm texture. Another local cheese is the Chèvreton, nearly always eaten while fresh, often with double cream and sugar, or with salt and garlic. Oh my god, it's on French. When left to ripen, these cheeses are placed in a dovecot-like cages mounted on high poles, so that the wind may circulate about them. There you go. A cheese pole. They must be protected by the shade of trees, before they quickly ferment and rise if the sun reaches them, spoiling Chèvreton's peculiar flavour. Can you imagine that? That's just cheese on a pole in a tree. All roads lead to Paris. So there you go. You can't imagine these places existing. I just can't. In Paris and the surrounding countryside, Our tour through the cheese areas of France comes to an end. For many centuries, Paris has been the political, administrative and cultural centre of the country. It is here that the great tradition of haute cuisine were established. In the old days, the regional produce of the land, including many varieties of cheese, reaches the halls of the Paris markets. Here, the cheese has become nationally known and would gradually achieve world fame. Let us turn to Brie cheese. Roi de fromage, the king of cheeses, which is closely associated with the capital city. So Brie is from Paris. Oh my god. Paris lies in the basin, in the earth's crust. Thank goodness it's in the earth's crust. I hate it to be on the lunar crust. It is as if nature had pressed down a pile of dishes until the edges remained slightly above the surrounding, gently sloping inwards, steep to the outside. The hollow of the centre forms the Ile de France, the area immediately east of the capital, Champagne, fertile districts with the lush pastures. Here is the home of the large Brie cheese, known as a jewel of the Ile de France. Brie came from a world-famous overnight. At the Vienna Congress of 1841 to 1815, when statesmen of Europe were laying the foundations for the new post-Napoleonic period, there were great celebrations, banquets, dinners between negotiations. During one such... Oh dear. I think Napoleon came back. During one such occasion, an argument arose on which country produced the best cheeses, or so the story goes. Always the Frenchman Talleyrand proposed that different national cheeses be allowed to compete with one another at a large banquet. But Talleyrand was a gourmet and a cook as well as a diplomat. It was probable that he had never doubted the outcome of the competition. Brie de Meaux emerged as the very best of some 60 cheeses. Unanimously, it was crowned king of the fromages. Indeed, Brie was both the king of the cheeses and the cheese of kings and kings' consorts. Louis XII and Henry IV enjoyed the cheeses, as did the wife of Louis XV, Maria Lezinxia, who included Brie in her favourite patties. Brioche à la Reine, and then there were the writer Alexandre Dumas, who provided his Three Musketeers with meals, always ended with Brie sprinkled with Burgundy. There you go, Three Musketeers. The first mention of this cheese can be found in the records of the court of Charlemagne dating from 1712. Its name comes from the province of La Brie, in the department of Seine-et-Marne. Until middle of the last century, Brie was exclusively made on farms, often in red run flora. This has now become almost entirely factory-made cheese, producing under rigidly controlled hygienic conditions, and the desirable red flora only occurs along the edges of the cheese. Pre-ripened evening milk of the previous day is used, mixed with fresh morning milk. The art lies in spooning the curds in six successive layers until formerly wooden but now stainless steel rings, and removing the whey with the aid of a perforated spoon. The cheese is turned on each turning. Clean ridge mats are placed on the top and underside. After 6 or 7 days, it's sprinkled with powdered Penicillium Cantalum, and then allowed to ripen for 4 weeks at a temperature of 11 to 12 degrees. Should the temperature either rise or fall, immediate changes in shape, colour and taste result. The correctly bred Brie should have an evenly distributed mould layer over a cream-coloured soft paste without holes, and a flavour, depending on variety, which ranges over all nuances from mild to very strong. After ripening, the cheeses are wrapped in wax papers and packed in chipped wood boxes and provided with a label that guarantees the origin. Formerly, Brie often carried the name of its place of origin. A variety still exists with unique local character. Brie de Colmier, for example, the so-called Petit Brie, and weighs only 450 grams, is prepared with fresh pasteurized milk. It is frequently unripened in a at the first appearance of mould and has a very mild, delicate flavour. If the ripening process is allowed to continue, however, the taste becomes more pronounced, resembling that of Camembert. The influence of air on the rind makes a very special little cheese. The required amount of air in the ripening room is a decisive factor of quality. Fromage à la prix is always eaten practically fresh. Bouille de la Milan, on the contrary, is a well-ripened. Unlike other brie varieties, the mold formation in this cheese takes place spontaneously, and no penicillin can deliver is added. Well, penicillin is a bacteria. That's a mold. I don't understand. Oh no, it's penicillin or mold. I think penicillin is a mold. Sorry, it's a bit stupid. It is a mold. After ripening, the cheese has a homogeneous structure with a reddish or blue layer of mold, a nutty flavor which is less powerful than the aroma. Varieties of Brie de Milan are Brie de Montereau and Ville Saint-Jacques and Cendre de Brie coated with ash and has a grey-black rind. Fromage de Dieu, a cousin of Brie, used to be wrapped in chestnut leaves. Apart from Brie, the surrounding Paris offers quite a number of cheese varieties, many of them little known outside the place of origin. Olivette is a farmhouse cheese from Orléans. Orleans are wrapped in leaves and preserves and ashes of vine stalks. The factory version is rather sharp, white mold cheese sometimes packed in hay, au fond, or ashes, cendre. These are also the Olivet Bleu. Vedrome and Villebarou are both interesting cheeses, difficult to find but worth searching for. That's true of all things in life. Much better known is the fresh cream cheese Boursin, widely exported in cardboard boxes. Its light taste is often strengthened by the addition of garlics and herbs, or by the coating of crushed peppercorns. Celle-sur-Cher is a very savoury, chivalry goat-covered with salt and charcoal. Fontainebleau? Wow. I lived in Fontainebleau for 2 years in France. It doesn't show, I can't pronounce any French words. Petit Suisse. Fontainebleau rivals Petit Suisse. It's a very light, creamy, very spongy cheese, excellent for a sweet dessert, sold as such in the famous Paris Café of La Capulie. Finally, Charousse is a wonderful soft white mold cheese, milky and fruity to taste and possibly touch, sour, with a very fine but penetrating aroma. Many foreign cheeses are produced in France, including cheddar, gouda, Edam, gorgonzola, as well as cheese spreads. There is a market for these cheeses, but they have a hard time competing with the genuine natural cheeses that France has to offer. Paris and French cuisine. Paris became the gastronomic centre of the Western world because of at least three factors. Number one, the imagination, skill and improvisation of ordinary people in the preparation of their food. Two, the importance of elegant and refined cuisine in the royal court and radiating influence of French politics and diplomacy. None of these factors should be ignored, least of all the first one. The brilliance of the life of Versailles, close to the densely populated, hard-working capital, contrasted with the supplemented and solid traditions of French country cooking. The essence of French cuisine is not in complicated, sumptuous recipes, but excellent ingredients and well-tried methods of preparation. It's not for nothing that the food in even the smallest Paris restaurants is unsurpassed. And so it is with cheese. Every Frenchman knows how cheese should be eaten. The experience of centuries has enhanced his knowledge of the specific quality and character of many varieties. No meal in France is complete without cheese, eaten with crisp French breath, ideal companion, wine. So we get on to 1976, Germany, but it's the Federal Republic of Western Germany. Okay, that's France. It's quite an amazing world through France. I don't know how in the modern day people would organise this atlas. It would be interactive. And you should, you know, have people be able to order holidays. It would be much more integrated. you'd be able to get a flight centre for cheese too, or something like that. A mighty low-lane plane dominates that stretch of Europe south of the Baltic Sea. From the Soviet Union, it sweeps through Poland, East Germany, and the northern territories of West Germany to reach the Netherlands and the border of Denmark. Along the North Sea, the plotters and dikes join up in the west of the Dutch lowland. For centuries during the Middle Ages, this vast area of west of north of Danzig was a great trading centre. For one thing, there were many well-placed seaports, Leerburg on the Baltic and Hamburg and Bremen on the Elbe and Oise rivers, which feed the North Sea. Together, these cities formed the powerful trade federation known as the Hanseatic League. Since the League monopolized most of the produce of Northern Europe, it follows that considerable variety of cheese found its way from the transit port. So that's the Hanseatic League. I'll have to memorize that. Furthermore, there was good dairy country. Ostfriesland, Schleswig, Holstein, Niederschleswig were unlike Bavaria, with its big landowner farms and their properties, were among the most important cattle breeding regions. This is the natural homeland of the black-patched Friesian Holsteiner cows. Further to the south, the fertile lowlands deteriorate to the desolate Lüneburg heath, which affords scant opportunity for dairy farmers. West Germany, in fact, has greatly contrasting landscapes. The central German highlands from the Rhineland across Bescherwald, rivers run between beautiful hills which are clad with vineyards and surrounded by castles. The Fairydale Brothers Grimm cheese, the traditional fairy food, is made here, although most farms have fewer cattle than those in the north. Further to the southeast, the central plateau climbs up to the height of Swabia and Bavaria, where Lake Constant and Bergen Sea straddles the Swiss-German border. Now, Swabia is Einstein's home. He's a Swabian. In the Argo Alps, east of the Bergen Sea, an area outstanding castle of breeding and dairy production, the well-known cheese town of Crampton is found. Well, I've never heard of Crampton, but it's well-known. The Argo Allgäu, it's all German to me, Allgäu, is truly alpine landscape of dark pine forests, where the springtime meadows are carpeted with the mountain flowers and herds of brown cattle are located by flat metallic ringing of cowbells. The Allgäu has now superseded the north as a cheese producing region. I don't quite understand all this German stuff. Monasteries, merchants, and cheesemakers, of course. Happy are the cheesemakers. Homemade, non-rennet cheeses were made by the northern Germans over thousands of years ago. They probably bore close resemblance to the present Sauermilch cheese. Of course, it's spelt in German, Kraft English. But non-rennet is the enzyme which changes the water solubility of the casein. It'll be really interesting. I'd like to know what the molecule of casein is. When people learned the skill of making good rennet, a more stable product was established. So it's like sourdough. It's a unknown way of doing it. Okay. A more stable product is established, and cheese making spread from Schleswig-Holstein over eastern West Prussia. In the castles of Teutonic Knights founded by the Baltic Germans, cheese were made. Herrens Kass for nobility and lower quality Linsdesk Kass. So I'm thinking, whereas K-A-A-S is for, is Dutch for cheese. Kass cloth. And here's the German have the K-A Dairas, the sissies, cheese. The village of Liebenwiede, a well-known trade and export centre, was even renamed in 1341 as Kasmark, which means cheese market or cheese market. About the same time, the cooperative Holstein and Mary system was established, whereby farmers communally processed their milk. So they're doing communal processing, the krauts are doing it way before anybody else. Even so, cheese production far from met the home requirements, and it was centuries that followed. Cheese was imported from Holland via Hamburg, Bremen, and Emden. Northern German merchants visited the weekly markets at Amsterdam over the Dutch cities, while Rotterdam, Dordrecht supplied German provinces via the Rhine. Dutch Eastern cheese, coloured red since the 13th century, was also appreciated by the Germans, that the foreign makers of other cheese types began colouring their red cheeses and sold them as Edam. Oh, there you go, poor Germany, getting fake Edam. Many of the Germans' popular cheeses types are copies of variations, very foreign originals. The Argo has centuries-old tradition of making Emmental, but the quality varied considerably in spite of the efforts of one Joseph Stadler, who in 1821 sent for two experts from Switzerland to try to control the fat content, temperature and ripening. You know, can't control it, yet methods remained primitive. The cheese kettle still hung over the open fire. Temperature was judged by the elbow. Rennet was imperfect. Pressing was done by stones. Drastic improvements came about with the introduction of grill kettles in the 1870s, places established to facilitate the ripening of the cheese. So Garkellers would be sellers. The Alcohol Emmental is now a quality product. Oh, I was a bit concerned about that. You can see all these German Munsterkass. Munster, I don't know where you got Kass means cheese. K-A-S-S-E. Although Germans produces a great variety of cheese with a wide range of flavours, shapes and sizes, plus a remarkable number of fresh sour milk types, there seems to be a particular affection for those pungent strong cheeses, which at some examples have the power to fell trees. It's not really known why the cheeses are so admired. Perhaps it's the traditional love of the heroic. Possibly Siegfried was raised on a diet of black bread, beer and Handkäse, which is hand cheese. Those archetypal hand-molded farmhouse cheeses whose modern descendants so readily betray their whereabouts. So, my godfather. It's all German to me. Not content with the indigenous types, Germans looked around for inspiration and finally borrowed and later to naturalize Limburger and Rodmer, the famous stinking cheese of Belgium, to which they added a lively Munster cheese from Alsace. Of course, that's German, of course, not French. The Belgians, at any rate, seemed fairly unconcerned that their Limburger has moved several hundred miles downwind. I feel like downwind, isn't that beautiful? Another suggestion is that the Germans' assertive cheese complements the national taste for highly flavoured gamey meats such as boar, pheasants, hare and venison, or a strong cheese needs to be washed down by copious draughts of German beer. Emmental was not the only cheese to make alcohol. The Allgäu, a famous dairy region. From 1830, Karl Heerben advised the Belgian Herve cheese specialist Gorschen manufactured soft. There's Havarti and Camembert have female oranges. Limburger and Romander cheese. Nilsmann's Limburger was such a success that it's now one of Germany's most important cheeses, in spite of a period of falling interest in which may have brought about a change in consistency. Modern Limburger is more solid. There are loaves and block solid shaped Limburgers of different weights. The required fat content and names of the cheese are precisely specified. Halberfettsdorf is 20 to 30. This is called Star. I'll try and go and pronounce it. Dreivertelfetstuff, 30 to 40, and just Fetstuff is 40 to 45, and Volfetstuff is 45 to 50, and Rahmstoff is above 50 cents. Romander cheese has the additional 60%, and finally the double Rahmstoff with a fat content of 85%. The quantity of dry matter is also regulated. So, you know, if they want to go fat, they go completely fat. Limburg is difficult to make because this piquant cheese, with its reddish bacteria flora, is extremely sensitive to both temperature and moisture, degree of pre-ripening. The original Belgian cheese has been almost wholly adopted by Germany, and is manufactured only on a large scale. The dry salting by hand has now been replaced by a brine bath. 24 hours for a big Limburger cheese, 7 to 12 hours for small, and 2 to 4 for Romander, according to the fat content. During the first stages of rottening, cheeses are placed close together. They are separated as soon as the flora appears. The cheeses are then given a mechanical wash with corine bacteria. Pronounce it C-O-R-Y-N-E bacteria. From 4 to 8 times, depending on the size of the cheese. To prevent flora becoming washed away, the wash is kept and used again to re-inoculate some. Only with that washing, it just smooths, and where you wash an old cheese with a new cheese. I wonder if that's part of what's going on. You know, the cloth, you start washing an old cheese and start moving out. After 3 to 4 weeks, ripening, the cheese should show a yellow-brown line on the surface, without cracks, but with a somewhat sticky flora. They have a white to yellow-coloured paste, which is crumbly and pliant, soft core. Consistency varies with fat content. Though fat Limburgers are firm, and in the 4th week of ripening, the flavour changes from spicy to piquant. So I wonder what spicy is and what the difference between spicy and piquant means. Romador is softer, milder, and it's ripe after 2 weeks. The Fruchtstückkäse, breakfast cheese, the small round Limburger that ripens in its packing and can be eaten almost fresh, or only a little ripened. Also is the Arco is a variety of Limburg called the Wischklacker Bierkäse, excellent with the beer with a white waxy flora. Although a small cheese, only 600 grams, it has the prolonged brine bath of 2 to 3 days, consequently a slow ripener, taking from 5 to 6 months, but it can be stored for over a year. The cheese is semi-hard and needs a sharp, piquant flavour. So not with piquant resistance of bacon. A cheese that tastes like bacon, oh god, I'm going to be sick. The Aalborg Gaskäse is made in two types, orange and white. The former is prepared from 60 to 80% raw goat's milk and 20 to 40% of pasteurized cow milk. That sort of makes sense. But I would say I changed the numbering here. It develops a thin yellow, red-brown corine flora. The paste is light yellow and smooth. With strong spicy aroma, this cheese, like Romander, becomes ripe after 2 to 3 weeks. And the longer it ripens, the more pronounced its goaty aroma. Goaty aroma, that's awful. The white types is a similar quantity of goat's milk is used, and between 60 to 70%. But after the brine bath, the cheese is dipped in a solution of whey and Camembert culture. God, it's ripe after 11 days, and it's packed in foil. The cheese bears the white rind flora of Camembert and has the lighter consistency than the grey Castor. So C-A-S-S-E. I don't quite understand how to pronounce that. It develops some holes, has a milder flavour, and a mushroom aroma which becomes more piquant and goatee as right wing progresses. But I don't understand what piquant means. Okay, other regions and other countries. Oh my god, it keeps on going. Oh, look, the Germans. It's a shepherd dance. Obviously, the Germans are having lots of fun doing it. It's all Federal Republic of Germany. Another German cheese of foreign ancestry, originating from the French Vosges, the Munster, with its soft, semi-hard paste and red wine flora. It sounds German enough anyway, for the Almut has been added to the original name, Umlaut. The Munster, to avoid any confusion. Okay. But that is German. The cheese comes in 125, 500, 600, or 1 kilo grams, or 1,000 grams. It's fine, mild, and close texture, and white to yellow colour, with thin skin instead of a rind. Weinkäse, which means wine cheese, is named for its affinity with the fruity Rhine and Moselle wines. The cheese has a white to yellow colour, a glossy, delicate paste, develops a thin skin in a manner of Munster. It is flat, round cheese weighing about 75 grams with an orange surface floor and a fat content of 30, 45 or 50%. Butterkäse, which means butter cheese, has a yellow, brown or red wine, but sometimes develops no rind at all. It was once a soft cheese type, but now made slightly more firm. A good Butterkäse should be elastic and easy to cut. The flat, round type weighs 0.5 to 1.5 kilograms, and the sausage-shaped variety weighs 2 kilograms. A similar cheese called the Schnitzkäse, a mild and somewhat sour-tasting paste, should never be pappy, chalky, or contain holes, faults that do occur with this type of cheese. The well-known Tilsit cheese was first made by a Dutchman living in Tilsit, East Prussia, now Solvitz, USSR. Today, it's also made in West Germany, as it is less strong variant Ansgar from the border region of Marsh. Behind the sea dikes of Schleswig-Holstein comes a cheese that shares several characteristics with Tilsit. The other countries have small dog things, but the Germans have this complete automated cheese factory here. I'm going to read it to you. A view of a modern cheese factory in Wagging. Curd from the cheese vats on the overflow flows via the chute, which can turn full circle into a filling apparatus on the lower floor. Here, molds are filled with cheese, and it's like a thing there, but there's a German there making his cheese, and he's just got a hat on, he's just wearing a singlet. It's just a very, and the entire thing has been washed, hosed down. Pretty interesting to see from the 1970s. This is Wilster Marschkäse, a loaf-shaped, semi-hard cheese, and one that's easy to cut with irregular little holes and light. At some sourish flavour, it's also very quick ripening. French cheese, Port de Salut, first introduced by the Trappist monks, is one of the most popular of all cheese types. Several countries make a version, and in Germany it's known simply as Trappistenkäse, made according to the French recipe of either 1.5 kilograms or 2.7 kilograms loaf-shaped cheese of about 45% fat content. If you cannot identify a cheese by its appearance, you may confirm your suspicion by merely tasting it. No two comparable cheese types are exactly similar, even though they are made to share similar names. Edelschimmelkäse and Edelbiskäse are names that can refer equally to blue vein cheese or cheeses with a Camembert-like white wine flora. But their flavours are sharply distinctive. The latter cheese is made with pasteurised milk, mostly cow's milk, but sometimes mixed with ewe's milk, to which is added a starter and culture of penicillin roquefort. The cheese might have been called roquefort cast, but the name Roquefort was protected. The mould veins are evenly spread, and the texture of this fine cheese is smooth, with a slight tendency to crumble. The colour is light yellow, the paste is piquant or sharp, and the fat content usually higher than the required minimum of 45%. Also belonging to this group of cheeses is the Saint Mauritius, a small cylindrical shaped seed, mildly erect, with rind on which a combination of white and red mould can develop. In its unripe stage, it is a white cream yellow with porous texture, becoming smoother as it ripens and reddening towards the rind. Three very popular German cheeses are the Karamelkäse, shaped either as a sausage or in blocks of 1 to 2 kilograms, with a smooth rind enclosing subtle, close texture paste, more aromatic and smoked version, the bar-shaped tapis cheese, with butter yellow colour, elastic consistency and flesh sour taste, and the mild, though slightly more piquant, Parmesello, a hard, low-fat cartwheel used for grating. This is doing my head in. So I really don't know what piquant means. Fresh and ripe cheeses are of prime importance to the German cheese range. Fresh cheeses in German, Frischkäse, means fresh cheese, is sort of divided into the following main types. Speiselquark. Oh, that's pretty interesting. I'd love to have some Speiselquark. Rahmfrischkäse and Doppler Rahmfrischkäse and it's Schitzkäse, according to the Korean fat content. Regional names of Frischkäse tend to vary, however, so that in Aku it's Zecker and Nederland is called Kalskäse, for the Wittenberg and Matt and Central Germany. It's either Toffen or Lügenkäse, and Frischkäse must be made from pasteurized milk or semi-cases of high-quality soluble milk powder. The preparation of Frischkäse requires more starter than other cheeses, so less than a low curdling temperature and a longer curdling time. I don't know what starter means. I thought rennet was the starter. Starter may be the bacteria. Some herbs or spices are worked in. All varieties have an even, soft consistency, no rind, and a fresh, light, sour taste. As more are very soft, they are packed in plastic cups or tubs. Their colour varieties from milk white to cream yellow, depending on the fat content. And we've got a full fat content here. Now, we're going to go up. There's the Shepherd Dance, which these people have done in full Germans. But there's also the cream cheese sandwich and the sour milk Käse. And how many more pages do I have to do for Germany? Well, Germany's only two more pages, but I am really running out of time. I've been podcasting for an hour. Well, this next topics are the cream cheese sandwich, sour milk Käse, buttermilk, skim milk, and Beesting cheeses. That's be interesting what Beesting is. Cheese in German cookery, and the word quark comes along. So, that's the quark's got a name. That's page 201. And there's another page there, and then of course we do Switzerland. Switzerland goes for pages upon pages upon pages. Get to Austria. So let's break it here, and there's various Austrian people. How much does Austria go for? Italy, my godfather. This is pages and pages. It's Bulgaria, Bulgarian cheeses, Hungarian cheeses, Polish cheeses. These are all mostly surely they have Spanish cheese here. Austria. I think Spain may have been left out. Let's quickly go. Look, you're rather safe. Look, South Africa gets, Africa gets a page, the whole continent gets a page. Chile, Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, Central America, United States get a lot. Canada gets a lot. Canada's a really interesting, Soviet Union gets a page. Czechoslovakia, East Germany, Greece gets a lot. Yugoslavia, Spain gets a page. Portugal, we tend to fly through, but we've still got some major cheese places to go through. Austria, Switzerland is a major thing to get across. Okay, I'm going to finish it here and starting up with Germany and the cream cheese sandwich and sour milk, Cass. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.